Developer on Fire Dave Rail is where you get personal with your favorite geeks and hear rubber ducking stories about their excellent adventures in the Coder Galaxy. This show is so powerful, it requires a bolt of lightning to generate the necessary 1.21 gigawatts. And now, here's your host, Dave Rail.
Greetings, geeks. Developer on Fire, shaking and quaking and firing up geeks everywhere. I am stoked to present today's special guest, Gary Pendergast. It's a pleasure to have you here, Gary. Let's light this up. How does that sound?
Sounds awesome. It's great to be here.
All right. Gary Pendergast works for Automattic, is a WordPress core contributor, and a member of the WordPress core security team. Gary can most often be found in Melbourne, Australia. He enjoys making things, breaking things, and fixing things, which keeps life interesting. In his spare time, he has been known to get excited about quality food, interesting beers, strong coffee, and live music. And those all sound like pretty appealing things. So Gary, that gives us a little bit of an introduction of who you are, but I'm sure it doesn't tell the whole story. Could you just tell us a little more about yourself and what makes you tick?
Oh man, a bit about myself. So it's kind of the, well, as far as making me tick with software and that kind of thing, the whole making and breaking things, it's a, that's kind of where the security thing comes in, as I like seeing how things work and how I can make them do something that they're not supposed to do. It keeps things nice and challenging.
Yeah, I like that mentality of hey, I'm going to do everything I can against this thing and see where it stands up and where it doesn't and all of that kind of stuff. So could you tell us a little too about Automattic and just what that company is all about and a little bit about kind of how you're split? I know that you're doing a lot of core WordPress stuff. Can you tell us kind of your split between doing WordPress itself and the things that you're doing that are more related to the business there, I guess?
So Automattic is where the people who make WordPress.com and a bunch of WordPress-related services. The CEO of the company was also the co-founder of the WordPress open source project. So my full-time job is working on that open source project. It's fairly directly business-related because the work I do in the open source project also drives WordPress.com.
Oh, okay. So you're completely dedicated then to the open source WordPress itself.
Yeah, it's a thing I enjoy doing, and it's not so bad to be paid to be an open source hippie all the time.
that sounds great. Yeah, I know a few guys who are doing some similar things where they've got kind of a corporate sponsor that's paying them to just maintain open source products, and I think that's a really neat model, and it sounds really rewarding.
Exactly, and that's kind of a thing that we've encouraged in the WordPress world is we like to call it Five for the Future, is for companies that are making money with WordPress to dedicate 5% of their employees' time to the open source project, whether it be developing or support or doing podcasts is totally a legit thing to make WordPress more recognized.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense, and I think that's a pretty reasonable ask there. WordPress, it's huge. I mean, everybody's website, seems like is using WordPress. I've heard numbers like, you know, roughly a quarter of the internet is using something like that. That's gotta be, really, rewarding and really exciting to think that, the code that you're using is that widely used. How does that, factor into what you're doing and kind of how you feel about your daily life?
It's a pretty fun challenge. It's thinking about when I'm writing code for core WordPress, how is this going to work on everything from the small $5 a month host up to the massive sites like WordPress.com or sites like the New York Times and that kind of thing are using WordPress at their back end as well.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. And that is, I'm sure, an interesting challenge having to deal with such disparate types of things that you're dealing with.
Yeah, it's good fun.
Yeah. So we've already touched a little bit on some of the value that you're providing to different places and some of the back and forth with Automattic and the WordPress open source and other businesses getting involved in that, whether contributing or podcasting, those kinds of things. And I think that really kind of leads us into talking about how we're providing value and how we think about those things. I'd like to start that by just asking you, what does value mean to you?
What does value mean to me? I think value means being as simple as possible, but no simpler, as it were.
Oh, yeah.
It's to, when we're building software, for example, then we want to just get out of the way. We want to provide a tool that people can just use and they can do whatever they want to do with it. For WordPress, that's to make their sites or to write blog posts or whatever that happens to be. For Microsoft Word, it's to write documents. For Android or for iOS, it's to be able to make phone calls or check Facebook or whatever. But you want to write something, make software that lets people just get on with whatever they want to do. I think that's the most valuable thing we can do.
I like that as simple as possible, but no simpler formulation. I mean, it really speaks to the fact that there is some intrinsic complexity to the problems you're trying to solve. And if you don't have at least that much complexity in your solution, well, then you can't possibly actually solve the problem. So you certainly can't be simpler than the problem that you're trying to solve. But finding that balance of being as simple as you can in that space, that makes a lot of sense. And you talked about things like Android, right, that are really platforms that things are built on top of, and WordPress is really the same thing, and the plugin architecture and letting people extend WordPress and all of that stuff, it's really a neat solution to the problem of just publishing content on the internet, and it's a broad problem, right? So you're dealing with a lot of different types of things that you have to consider when you're dealing with the core of something like WordPress.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's such a wide variety of sites that use WordPress from your basic blog, where it kind of started, through to like a basic content management system, through to massively complex CMSs where people have multiple steps of editorial processes and that kind of thing. And then outside of publishing content, then it's more about e-commerce, or I actually saw there's one great site called Gamefruit, which uses, you wouldn't know it, but it uses the entire back end of the site is based on WordPress, but the front end is all about building games, like HTML5 games.
Oh, wow.
It's
that's something that you wouldn't expect. That sounds like it's got to be some custom website rather than built on top of something like WordPress. That's really interesting. And then you have all these plugins for things like podcasting and all kinds of different things that just provide more functionality on top of the core.
Exactly. And by making WordPress as extensible as possible, then people can provide these kind of plugins that just scratch the itch that they happen to have.
It makes a lot of sense. So what really lights you up about technology and the things that you're doing?
What really lights me up about technology? I like to see things go fast. I think that a lot of what we do in modern, building technology in the present, is that we rely on the performance of modern devices. Like I have a Nexus 6. It's an extraordinarily fast phone. I can play games on that I couldn't play on my first PC. Which is crazy. But we also kind of forget that that's very much a first world thing. If you go and look in Africa or a lot of through Asia, you see people using much more lower powered devices. And so I think that we get caught in a trap of, oh, it happens to work on my super fast computer or super fast phone, it'll work for everyone. Where that's often not the case for a global audience.
Yeah, that makes sense. Optimizing for the lowest common denominator, I guess, is kind of what you're talking about there. And it's a definite challenge. So when you're dealing with, you have all of this sophisticated hardware in front of you. Are you testing some of the things you do on some lesser capable devices and things like that?
Yeah, so I also have some lower powered devices that I test, and for web development and that kind of thing, I find that Chrome DevTools is really, really good, because it has a lot of the things to pretend that you have a bad network connection or pretend that the render speed is slower than you're actually capable of.
Yeah, that's really neat stuff. So how did you get your start in doing software?
I like to say that I started writing software because my parents weren't Catholic.
That needs an explanation.
So what happened is I went to a Catholic primary school. And part of the Catholic rituals is when you're 10 or 11, you do your first communion. That was fine, but because my parents weren't Catholic, I wasn't allowed to participate in that. So instead, I basically had a couple of hours while the other kids went off to the church and learned, wow, learned all of the stuff. I had a couple of hours a week where I got to play on the classroom computer. At the time, there was like one computer shared between two classrooms or something. So I played around on that, and I think I beat Where in the World Has Come in San Diego a few times, and I got bored of that, and I wandered into the library and asked if they had any computer books. So the librarian found one that was about writing computer games. Like, oh, great. This is awesome. I can write my own games. This is amazing. So I went through the book, and it was an Apple IIe, so it was all in Apple Basic. And I went through it and learned all the basic stuff. And then they had this entire game. It was like a little text-based choose your own adventure. And I typed it out painstakingly. It was hundreds of lines. And I saved it on my 5 1/4 inch floppy disk and ran it, and it didn't work. And that was when I was introduced to the world of debugging software as well.
Debugging, yeah.
And so that's kind of how I got started. And then the idea of being able to just make computers do things, it just stuck with me.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I had an Apple IIe as well. And, you know, it was always, you know, you put in one of those floppies to boot to whatever software you wanted to use. And I remember just being curious, well, what if I don't put in a floppy and I boot this thing? And I found that it took me to a prompt. And I don't know how I figured out that I could write basic code at that prompt. But somehow, it's a fog to me how I figured out that I could write code there. But that was where I started, and I was like, oh yeah, I can write code here. I can bend this computer to my will and make it do things for me. And so that's a neat story. I like hearing especially, you know, it's been kind of a mixed bag. I've talked to some developers who it's been a little later in life that they got into software, and then a lot where as a kid it was just something that it's kind of being a fish in water. And so that's a neat story, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I enjoy telling that story. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a difference between someone who started early, like they just started experimenting as a kid, or someone who came to software later in life. Like, some of the best developers I know are people who didn't start writing software until after they finished college.
Yeah.
It's just when something clicks with you, then it just works.
I think that makes sense. And, there is a difference when I talk about when I play basketball with somebody, right? I can usually tell a difference whether this is somebody who's been playing basketball all their life or whether it's something that they came to a little later. But I think you're right about software, that it's a very different matter. And it's something that I don't know, maybe there's some sort of innate ability or something. So it's really, I think, mostly about passion and just how much it interests you. And that's, to me, I guess, where a lot of the aptitude for it comes from.
Yeah, I agree. I think that wanting to solve these complex problems has to be a big part of it. You'd have to be crazy to sit in front of a computer staring at text all day if you didn't enjoy it to some degree.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So in the journey of being a developer, I think, along the way, we all run into some bumps in the road and have some times where things don't go as we expect. Could you tell us about a time that you failed, fell flat on your face, or things just fell apart for you?
Oh, man. So I think that, in recent memory, I think one of the biggest things is remembering to test your code. Don't make assumptions that it's going to work. So on WordPress.com, any developer has the ability to push code to production immediately. Like, you commit the code to the repo, and then you type deploy, and it's deployed about 30 seconds later.
Wow.
We have a really, really fast rollout system. But as I say, with great power comes great responsibility. And I have bought down WordPress.com before. Pretty badly, just because I assumed that code was going to work how I thought it was going to work. I didn't really think about, well, is this really going to work when I throw it at 100 million websites?
Yeah, that's when you're dealing with that kind of scale, that's I'm sure that your heart probably stops just about every time that something goes out if you're not completely confident that you have really tested that thing.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's still a thing. Like I'll write code, I'll deploy it, and then I'll be watching the error. We have on our IRC server, we have an errors channel, and it just gives a sample of the errors coming from web servers. And as you type deploy, you press enter and you just wait. And you kind of hold your breath just for a second. Is it going to start exploding or not?
Oh, yeah. 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 Wow. Well, so I think that speaks a lot to the confidence that there is in the team there, that is something that developers are at liberty to do something like that. There's probably a lot of really good automated testing in place to make sure that things like that, that things don't go wrong when one of these deployments happen. Can you tell us a little bit about what that looks like?
So we've got a few levels of automated testing. So of course we have unit tests and that kind of thing, which is that stuff isn't run automatically. It's expected that the developer will run that before they deploy it. We trust our developers to kind of do the right thing. And we have some basic about 5 or 10 seconds worth of tests just to make sure you haven't done anything completely insane that's okay. Run just before you deploy. But for the most part, we've found it far more valuable to give developers the freedom to just write code and then deploy it. We get far more valuable feedback from our actual users rather than waiting around for it to go through processes of testing and feedback and so on and so forth.
Well, I'm sure that enables you to move really fast. Most of the organizations that I've been around would be not very comfortable with something like that. I guess when you've got an organization that it's kind of developers from the top, that colors a little bit of the philosophy of the entire organization.
It does a bit, and I think that we've worked hard to maintain that feeling of freedom amongst the entire company as it's grown. I mean, when I first started contracting for Automatic, there was about 20 people. When I came on full time, it was about 100. Now it's just over 400, I think. And as the company's grown, we've aimed to maintain that freedom where people, if someone has a good idea, then they're free to just go and do it. They don't have to get permission from a manager or their manager's manager, or they don't have to get a budget. They just go and do it. And if they convince other people that it's a good idea, then other people will join them.
Yeah. Well, I guess that kind of trust only stays in place as long as the people who have it are continuing to prove themselves worthy of it. So can you tell us a little bit more detail about a time that you did have a problem with this, right? One of these failures where you did bring down a bunch of sites, and maybe just a little bit of the circumstances and kind of nature of a bug that did something like that?
So let's try and remember. It's a while since I've done it because I kind of learned my lesson.
Sure.
Is a lot of my focus is on database. So okay. I'll write some code that will be the database driver for change how the database driver works in WordPress or what have you. But the problem is while I can write code that works really, really well on my local development environment, but it's, as I mentioned, when we're talking about throwing it at 100 million sites with hundreds of database servers, it's a completely different ballgame. So
it works on my machine, doesn't work in that environment.
Yeah. So we've kind of made it easy to fail, but easy to reverse that failure. When the worst case happens, when you just kill the entire site, then it's very, very quick to just revert that change, roll it out to all the web servers. You're up and running again in a matter of seconds. we've kind of, and our system seam as well is kind of aimed for that as well, is to make it really, really easy for developers to fix things when they make a terrible mistake.
That makes sense. Yeah, and I guess most of the time, users probably don't even notice that there has been a mistake in a majority of cases, right? It's there's probably some pretty high traffic sites that are going to see some problems, and you've got it fixed before a majority of sites have even been hit, I guess.
Yeah, and again, that's kind of plan for the worst and hope for the best. So in that respect, if we do bring down WordPress.com, the high traffic sites probably won't notice because everything is cached. We have several layers of caching, and it's pretty difficult to break all of it.
That makes sense.
You have to be putting in a special effort if you want to try and actually bring down those sites.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I imagine you've got some pretty good metrics in place to be able to have that feedback right away so that you can know that you need to do that quick rollback and that kind of thing.
Exactly. It's all about having, very, very immediate feedback saying, well, here's suddenly our web servers have exploded with these errors. You need to fix this now.
Yeah. So having talked a little bit about failure and some of the things that can go wrong, I want to hear about things that have gone really well for you. Could you describe what you would characterize as your greatest success?
Oh, greatest success. So there's a thing, let's talk about a fun story called Trojan Emoji. What happened is last year there was a security report on WordPress. It was submitted privately, so we were looking at it, and it was really bad. It affected well over 90% of all websites. I think we figured something like 97-98% of websites, and it could be done by an anonymous attacker. They didn't even need to log in. So really, really bad. And it was all to do with how MySQL handled strings with characters that it didn't know about. So if you try to insert a character into the database that wasn't a real character, then it would just truncate the string instead of removing that particular character that didn't work. And so that allowed for a cross-site scripting vulnerability.
I see.
So the problem is we could fix it really easily. There was a simple fix. It took us the afternoon to write and test, and it worked, except that it broke about 50 or 60% of all WordPress sites because they all depended upon the database connection to work in this particular way. So our option was to either write some extraordinarily complex code to try and work around this, or to push out a thing that would break half of all WordPress sites. Clearly, when one of the primary tenets of WordPress is that backwards compatibility is the most important thing, that we never ever break backwards compatibility, then obviously the only option was let's see if we can fix this without breaking things. So we went about it, and it took us close to a year to write this fix.
An afternoon versus a year. That's a pretty big...
But the thing I was working pretty much full-time on it, and then there were a few other folks who were working part-time on it, and I was bouncing ideas off and so on. So it was a lot of people hours, but compare even half a dozen people working full-time versus breaking millions of sites, which would require millions of hours of developer time to fix. It's kind of a no-brainer from that perspective. So we wrote the fix, and as far as we could tell, it worked, but we really, really needed feedback. We needed to be tested on a wider range of sites. So what we did is we decided that it's also slotted in this idea of fixing up character sets within WordPress and MySQL was that it fitted in really nicely with this idea that we could add emoji support to WordPress.
Okay.
So what we did is we started working on adding emoji support, and as part of that, we inserted this security fix. And we just quietly added it, and it's people kind of looked at it and went, well, that is a big patch of things that I don't understand. I assume that it's there for a reason. So we got great feedback. There were some bugs in it, which we were able to fix, and which was great to fix them before we pushed it out to every single WordPress site. And then as a bonus, we got emoji support. So that was the Trojan emoji. We added emoji support to fix one of the worst security bugs in that WordPress has ever seen.
Wow. Yeah. When you're dealing with that kind of vulnerability, that becomes a significant priority. And that's a pretty neat story about being able to address that thing and add some other functionality that people were asking for at the same time.
Yeah, so it was fun.
Pretty good. Yeah. So how do you stay current with what you need to know?
How do I stay current? So, well, most of my work is WordPress based. So it tends to be PHP, some modern JavaScript practices, and then with the WordPress things, like a lot of the people I know tend to be the ones setting the best practices, so I find out about them pretty quickly. But mostly, Twitter is often the best way. I just follow people who are in the various communities that I'm interested in. They tend to post articles and about what's happening, and I read them and keep up to date. I look at something and say, "Oh, hey, I think that would be useful to my job." I'll research it some more and see if it helps.
Yeah, I found Twitter to be kind of a big improvement over kind of the RSS, old style of having all of this blog content on Twitter. I mean, it's pretty easy to find something that's interesting and say, hey, that's something that I want to dig a little deeper and learn about that thing. But it really sounds like to you, I mean, being connected is really the best way to get to know things. And I think that makes a lot of sense, too.
Yeah, that's right. Connecting to people is great, and Twitter is a great way of discovering things just because people retweet useful things. I absolutely still do use RSS. I have about 100 or so feeds that I subscribe to, whether they be blogs, or I do like reading webcomics, so I've got a few of them. And RSS tends to be the way that I read my standard news and keeping up with information, and then Twitter tends to be about discovering new things.
Yeah, that makes sense. I used to be, if I'm reading blogs, I always had a problem with getting oversubscribed and then just inundated with stuff that it was pretty hard to keep up. So I don't do it as much just reading somebody's blog, in its entirety, or really, having RSS as my source. I find Twitter to be a lot more kind of my speed of being able to just selectively go find stuff, and with the limit on the amount of content there, I think it really serves me well. But I'm moving more the direction that you were talking about with being connected to people, and I'm finding a lot of great value in that.
Yeah, and as you said, it's really easy with RSS to get inundated, to oversubscribe to things, and you just get hundreds of new posts a day, and you're like, I have to dedicate hours of my life just to reading this. So I certainly went through a period of that. And I had to cut back. So now I really get maybe 60 or 70 total posts a day, but a lot of them I'll just skim through and kind of, oh, hey, that looks interesting, I'll read it in detail. It takes me half an hour to go through over the course of the entire day.
So how about books? Is there one book that you would recommend for my listeners that you think would be really useful for them to read?
Oh, one book. Can I cheat and recommend two?
Oh, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. So for the developers, I would recommend a book called Code Simplicity, The Fundamentals of Software. It's a short book. It's like 80 or 90 pages. And it's written by one of the lead developers of Bugzilla. And it's talking about how you need to, before you look at refactoring code, before you look at writing code, you need to understand the problem.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
Otherwise, you're just going to make more problems for yourself in the future.
Really, the kind of the domain-driven approach.
Yeah, and I think it's it really, even, I mean, I've been, even not counting when I used to code stuff as a kid, I've been developing professionally for about 15 years now. And it's, even I was looking at it and thinking, hey, that makes sense. It would be like, it's a thing I do, but it's nice to hear that it's, that someone's gone to the effort of formalizing that.
Great. Yeah. That's a book I haven't come across. So that's definitely something to add to my list. Thanks for that.
Really, really good. The second one is for everyone, and it's a bit of a self-plug. It's called The Year Without Pants.
The Year Without Pants.
Okay. The Year Without Pants by Scott Birkin. It's the story of WordPress.com, effectively. Scott came and worked for Automatic for about a year or two, and he then wrote a book about the experience and talking about the future of work, talking about how, I mean, we spend our days in front of a keyboard. I don't know about all of your listeners, but 90% of my time is writing code or writing email or reading stuff that I can do from anywhere in the world. So why would I need to do it from an office?
Yeah.
So that's what I do. I have my computer set up at home. I have my laptop that I can just take out if I feel like working outside or feel like working at a cafe or whatever. And it works. We have like Automatic, as I was saying, is about 400 people globally distributed. We have a few like lounge type spaces, but no actual offices. And people just do their job like that, whether it be they have an office at home or whether they work on their counter in the kitchen or whether they work at a cafe or a co-working space or whatever they prefer, and people get things done.
So I think, and the world is moving a lot more that direction, that having distributed organizations, globally distributed, is becoming more common. And I think that makes sense, and it does work. But there are some limitations, right? There's nothing like the communication of being in the same room with somebody. Are you finding that there are some limitations, or is it really kind of, you seem to paint a picture of it really working really well. Have you found any shortcomings of that?
So I think that there certainly are benefits of being in the same physical room with people, but I don't think that benefit is enough to have people in the same room 365 days a year or 200 work days a year. I guess we can't make people work weekends.
Some organizations might.
Well, yes. So what we do instead is the budget that would be allocated on owning office space, we then allocate to getting people together. So once a year, we fly the entire company to the same location, and so people can kind of have their meetings in person and that kind of thing. And then small teams will once or twice a year also have their own smaller meetups of 5 or 10 people, and they'll kind of work through some complex problems that really work best in person. So there's a balance. Yeah.
I think that makes sense. And having that opportunity to have some face time, I think, does mitigate a lot of the concerns that a lot of people would have about that.
Yeah. And I mean, there's certainly a lack of that social side that you get from working in an office on a day-to-day basis. But for me personally, if that's the only downside, then I'll take working from home every day.
Yeah, I think that too. I find that I'm just a lot more efficient when I am able to choose my own environment. And if I want to go and work at the library because my kids are bothering me and being too noisy, then you know I can do that as opposed to working at home and some of those things. So I share your really the appeal of being able to just have that flexibility that I can work anywhere, and I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, it's fun. I like it.
So what has you most excited about your current projects and your future?
Current projects. So currently in WordPress, we're working towards adding a REST API. So a standard API for interfacing with every single WordPress site. REST APIs are cool. Like a lot of big sites use them, but nobody's done it on this scale before. nobody's thought, how do we roll out an API to a quarter of the internet? And so it's full of really interesting challenges. And so that's...
Is that a lot of the common functionality in the XML RPC interface already, or is this something completely different?
So this is... the problem with XML RPC is, one, it's XML, and XML parsing just, it's never worked quite right. It's always just been a little bit too finicky, and it's always just been a bit too verbose. You can't really debug it. As well as the XML RPC protocol itself, you need to be authenticated, and it doesn't really support modern authentication systems like OAuth and so on.
Oh, yeah.
So... We found that that's it's not really an extensible method. So by moving to a REST API, a proper RESTful API, which at the moment we've just we have JSON support, and if you want to fall back, you can also do XML support.
Well, now you've got me really excited too, talking about OAuth and some of those kinds of things. That really has a lot of appeal to be able to, have authentication into your WordPress site to manipulate some content and do some of those things without having to give away, the credentials themselves to the site. I think you really got something there.
Exactly. So we're thinking about how we can provide that kind of service for the entire WordPress world. We haven't solved it yet, but we'll get there.
That's a neat problem. And I wish you luck on that.
Thanks. That's fun to work on.
Yeah. So on the other side of that, what are the greatest sources of pain in your life and work?
Oh, I think... So the greatest source of pain would have to be our commitment to backwards compatibility.
It is
from an engineering perspective, it is very, very difficult to maintain. It certainly gives our end users a huge amount of benefit, but for us to kind of think about how can we write this cool new feature while not breaking over 10 years of legacy code, tends to be a bit tricky.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, that's largely the Microsoft story, right? I mean, that's another company that's been very dedicated to backward compatibility, and it has really hamstrung them in a lot of ways on a lot of the things, trying to move forward into a modern world, in addition to a lot of other things as well. But, that certainly is a difficult challenge.
Yeah, and I think that in that respect, we do have some differences. For example, with the idea of adding a REST API, it means that we can allow people to build things based on WordPress without being without having to use PHP. It's, if you want to write everything in Node.js, then go for it, because that's it's just talking over a standard information protocol. It doesn't care about what language you're using.
Yeah. So it sounds like that really has a lot broader functionality too than the existing XML RPC. That could you write things like plugins using other kinds of things talking to this API?
Absolutely. So the idea would be you can add, if you have a plugin, you can add your own endpoints to it, that sites can talk together, that apps can talk to sites, and so on and so forth.
Oh, really neat. Yeah, that's really exciting.
So that's going to be fun. I'm interested to see what people do with it.
So what are some of the things that you like to geek out about besides software?
Geek out on things besides software. I would really like to start brewing beer. I've done a little bit of there's some local places that where you can go and they'll help you brew up your own mix and so on and so forth. But I'd like to set up my own thing at home. Cool. Because it's kind of that cool thing where you can where you just make slight adjustments to a recipe and you create a whole new experience.
Yeah, it's a complex system with a lot of different inputs and a lot of things going on coming out to the ultimate output. It's really not all that different from software, I guess, in a lot of ways.
I guess it is. It's I like being able to play with those tiny details and see what comes out.
Yeah. Well, my final question is, I want to ask you to provide three tips for delivering more value. They don't necessarily have to be programming or software related, just three things that you do and that you recommend to really make sure that you deliver.
Three things I do. Well, first one I think would actually be software related is make decisions. Is instead of giving your end users an option, decide what the best way to do something is. That's what you're being paid for. You're being paid for your expertise in whatever area you're working in. If you keep getting asked for an option, then you probably need to take a step back and say, well, can I make this software that I'm working on work in a manner that benefits everyone?
All right, that makes sense. Yeah.
Second one, I think exercise. It's really easy to get caught up in sitting in front of the computer. You have your daily routine. You get up, you have breakfast, you go to work, you work for your 8 or 9 hours, you come home, have dinner, watch a bit of telly, go to bed. Just allocate a couple of hours a week, whether it be go to the gym twice a week or go for a bit of a run, just something that elevates your heart rate effectively, gets a bit of a sweat and just gets your body moving.
Yeah, it's really easy as a desk jockey to get caught in the trap of, oh, I don't need to do that. That's not really, what is my bread and butter. But if you're not supporting the hardware that supports the software, you run into problems eventually.
That's exactly right. And on a related is eat well. I like to eat pizza and beer as much as everyone, but. I mean, your brain is a chemical process, and if you feed it crap, then you're not going to be working at 100% efficiency. So make the effort to eat decent food.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So before we go, how can my listeners follow you and keep up with what's going on in your world?
All right. So my website is pento.net, P-E-N-T-O.net, and on Twitter, I'm at Gary Pendergast. And my website also has links to all of my other social networks and GitHub and so on and so forth.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Gary, for your presence today. I think what you've shared here is going to be really useful to my listeners, and we're all better for having heard it.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's been great fun.
Thank you for listening to Developer on Fire with Dave Rail. You have just heard the inspiring stories of a top-notch geek. It's time for you to take that inspiration and go and do something great. When on fire you are, delivering value you will be.